This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave, sitting in for Terry Gross. What we know about our genes and inherited tendencies is largely a result of the research conducted on twins over the last century. In his new book, Twins, Lawrence Wright examines the mysteries surrounding multiple births. He also explores the nature versus nurture debate, which began with the early twin studies in the 1860s. Lawrence Wright is a staff writer for The New Yorker. He's the author of three previous books, including Remembering Satan, about recovered memory syndrome. Wright says that the research into twins has often been considered controversial because it raises the most basic questions about identity, who we are, and what helps shape what we become.
For the last 20, 30 years, behavioral geneticists have made a profound impact on the way we think about human behavior, and it's had an immense political effect, in my opinion. I think that the rise of these twin studies has shaped the way we think about individual responsibility, and that in itself has made us a more conservative society. And much of our information, even if people don't realize it, is derived from twin studies. And yet, twins are not the same. There are many differences among twins that are yet to be explored. So I think that in the next 15 or 20 years of twin research, we'll be concentrating on why twins are different, not why they're the same.
I think what's so frustrating for people about, specifically about twin studies, is that you can flip-flop in the nature versus nurture debate, as you're describing, depending upon your historical or the social climate, and that in the end we really see what we want to see in them.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, Barbara, I don't think anyone can look at these twin studies and come away unimpressed by the power of genes to mold individual personalities and intelligence and behavior. I certainly was deeply affected myself by working on this book and studying twins and talking to these researchers. I do think, however, that the nature-nurture dichotomy that has been at the heart of this debate for now over 100 years is really a false one. Let's take an example, for instance, such as alcoholism. If you're a twin who's an alcoholic, the chances are that your co-twin will be an alcoholic as well. It's about 50%. But if you have a gene for alcoholism, it's not going to be manifested in Saudi Arabia, for instance, or in an Amish culture. The environment has an enormous effect on whether these genetic tendencies are allowed to be expressed.
Now, you begin the book with a case study of identical twin girls who were given up for adoption at birth and placed in separate homes. Why don't you describe the case for us?
This is a really fascinating case because it's a study that has never been published. It's a secret study, and this particular case has been described, this one episode, Amy and Beth, the girls are called. They were separated at birth purposely and studied in an experiment to see how they would develop in separate homes in different environments. Amy was placed in, they were both Jewish girls and placed in Jewish homes in New York City. And Amy was given to a mother who was socially awkward and had kind of a flat personality. She seemed to have difficulty relating to the child, and the father was also expressed a kind of disappointment in the child, and she grew up having a lot of problems. Amy was tense. She sucked her thumb for most of her childhood. She wet her bed. She had nightmares. She had some gender confusion over her sexual identity. And in general, the psychologists who were following this child and studying her thought that she was a portrait of a rejected, adopted child. But Beth, on the other hand, was placed in the home of a mother who was very cheerful, who seemed to really love the girl. In fact, the mother changed her hairstyle and dyed it to make her look physically more like the adopted child. And they considered Beth to be the fun child, and the father was very open and accepting and available. And most psychologists would think that if Amy had been raised in Beth's home, the problems that she had as a child would have been eradicated. But the truth was that Beth grew up sucking her thumb, wetting her bed, experiencing the same kind of nightmares and gender confusion, and in fact expressed the same kind of longing for maternal affection that Amy did, despite the fact that her mother was visibly very affectionate. It seemed to me one of the most profound challenges that the twin studies have thrown down to psychology is, you know, if one of these girls appeared in a psychologist's office, he would probably attribute her problems to her home environment. And yet they had the same problems in different home environments.
So right off the bat in your book, you imply that what studying twins has contributed to the nature versus nurture debate is that parenting hardly matters at all to personality development, which it sounds profoundly depressing to
yeah,
a parent.
It's an unsettling and counterintuitive discovery that twin and adoption studies, which are sort of a perfect complement to twin studies, have shown us that the environment does contribute to the formation of our intellect and our personality and our behavior. But what in the environment is a factor? It is not what they call the shared environment, that is, the family that you grow up in, the schools and so on that you attend with your siblings, the church, your social class, all those things that we call the shared environment tend not to have much effect on the way people turn out, according to these studies. What does affect us is what's known as the unshared environment, and those are the things that happen to us individually. They're the people that are friends that we choose, the kinds of things we choose to study, the accidents we have in our lives, all those things that make us different from our siblings or our families are the things that tend to shape us. They're also the things that we tend to choose for ourselves. In other words, we tend to choose the environments that make us the people that we are.
Now, let's throw a bone to parents. Can good parents make children happy? Can they instill the self-confidence, the qualities, that the values that lead towards happiness?
Happiness, in fact, is one of the main things that families can contribute. Psychologists, we may call that positive emotionality. But it seems that if you're raised in a family with good values and it's a loving environment, you will, as you would expect, tend to be happier. The other thing that families can do is create sociopaths and criminals. There's very little evidence that criminality is inherited. It's very much more a factor of the family environment. So families are extremely important for good and for ill. But many of the things that we think of as being naturally the result of the family environment that you grew up in turn out not to have very much to do with that.
Are there areas where genetics doesn't seem to have such a firm sway over behavior? That is, do twins, for instance, tend to fall in love with the same kind of people?
Well, this is another great mystery. Twins will buy the same kinds of clothes. They'll buy the same kinds of furniture. They take the same kinds of vacations. But when it comes to choosing a spouse, the spouses they choose are no more alike than spouses of unrelated people. And there seems to be no satisfactory explanation for that either, except for the inherent randomness of mate selection among human beings. I find that one of the most cheering and amusing facts of twin life. There was one study that asked twins to evaluate their co-twin spouse, and they found that about as many dislike the spouse as not, and vice versa. And only among the male twins, only 13% of them said, "I could have fallen for her myself." And among women, the rate was only 7%. So there seems to be a great deal of indifference and even antipathy towards twin spouses.
My guest, Lawrence Wright, is a staff writer for The New Yorker. He's the author of four books, including Remembering Satan, about recovered memories. His new book is Twins. We'll be back after this break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just tuning in, my guest is New Yorker reporter Lawrence Wright. His new book is Twins. Let's talk about cloning. First of all, yes. Are clones twins?
Well, you might say clones are more perfect twins. There would be no doubt some difference between identical twins and clones, because clones would not be sharing the same womb environment. And identical twins, because they are born and reared in the same womb, suffer an awful lot of trauma and competition that a clone would not. And so it's theoretically possible to make a more identical twin by making a clone. It's amusing to me that people are sort of dismissing the cloning procedure as being just another way of making identical twins, as if we understood what identical twins are. I think identical twins are far more mysterious than clones. Cloning is a theoretically very easy tactic, but we really don't understand where identical twins come from or why they're so rare, why the only other animal that regularly produces identical siblings in nature is the nine-banded armadillo, and it regularly produces identical quadruplets. But humans are very unusual, and we don't know why identical twins are produced or why they seem to be universal in throughout the world. It's about 3.5 births per thousand all over the world, and yet the rate of fraternal twins varies enormously, from about 6 per thousand in Japan to 45 per thousand in Nigeria. It's an enormous difference.
Has science learned something from twin studies that sheds light on the moral issues raised by cloning?
Well, I don't know that science is much interested in morality, but I would say that we know a lot about how twins have been separated by distance. There have been worldwide about 300 pairs that have been separated at birth that we know of and that have been studied, but they have not as yet been separated by time. They've been separated by culture. But I think clones will only be a variation on that. There'll be identical twins that grow up in separated only by time and not by necessarily by distance or by culture.
You tell some creepy stories about researchers in your book who have manipulated
right.
twins to fit their own scientific agendas. And I'm not talking about Nazis here, just I'm thinking of in this country, a set of triplets who were given up for adoption at birth and placed in three different homes of very different mm-hmm. class backgrounds, all with an older sister. They were never told of their brothers, and they were studied throughout their lives. And obviously these criteria fit the researchers' needs, the psychologist who advised the placements. I'm curious if the history of the twin studies gives you pause about how scientists have gone about their job all in the name of science.
Oh, it really does. And now, about this particular study, I think there's no question that you could not do that study now. Informed consent laws are such that I just don't think that study would be replicated. But it wasn't that long ago. It was begun in the 60s, and it involved about 11 twin pairs plus a set of triplets and several other pairs that were done as kind of controls. And so there were, in the case of the triplets in that study, they rediscovered that they, you know, were identical siblings. But there are a number of twins. Let's say there are at least maybe eight pair who were separated for that study that have never discovered that they are that they have an identical sibling in the world. I find that particular study really chilling. especially in that the adopted parents were never told that the children that they were adopting were identical twins. They were never given the opportunity to adopt that sibling. The children were allowed to grow up not knowing that they had someone else in the world that was so much like them. And given how special that relationship is, it was such a great thing for them to lose. I know that the twins and the triplets that have rediscovered themselves find their relationships with each other one of the most valuable things in their lives. So it's a terrible thing to take away from them.
I think what scares people most of all about genetic studies or behavior genetics is that policymakers will take this to the next step into social engineering. And certainly there's a history to that, that they'll propose things like parents should have to obtain a license before they're allowed to have children, or if evidence does point to a stronger genetic component to homosexuality, that parents will start screening for it.
Well, the whole history of this century has been a story of the rise and fall of behavior genetics, and then the rise again. It began with the eugenicist movement and the rise of Nazism, which took twin studies very seriously. And after World War II, when behavioral genetics fell into such disrepute, liberalism arose as a reaction to that in this country and elsewhere, largely based on studies by environmentalists who said that we're essentially kind of blank slates, and it's our environment that makes us who we are. And therefore, if we improve the environment, we'll improve ourselves, we'll improve the entire human race. Communism was based on that very notion, and that's why the communists in the Soviet Union killed their twin study programs, because the twin studies that they were developing found the opposite, in fact. And so communism itself did not prove to be a viable social alternative. Now I think we've got a much more conservative climate. And I think that the difference between the Great Society in 1965, which was the height of environmentalism and liberal thinking, and the contract with America in 1995, 30 years later, after these twin studies had made their mark, I think that the difference between those two eras is largely the result of these powerful twin studies that have persuaded policymakers that people are individually responsible for their actions, and it's not their families, and it's not their social class, and it's not the environment they came from, and changing their environment won't make a difference. And that has a big political consequence.
Lawrence Wright, I want to thank you so much. It's really been enjoyable talking with you today.
I've enjoyed it quite a lot myself. Thank you.
Lawrence Wright is a staff writer for The New Yorker. His new book is Twins.